From the latest hip-hop beats to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host, and as always, I hope you guys are striving, thriving, and surviving in these streets. I know I normally say in these corona-infested streets, but there is so much going on outside of the pandemic and beyond the pandemic. Right now, I mean, we are literally witnessing humanitarian crisis on American soil. There is just so much happening at this point. Today, we are not going to have our preliminaries. I know some of you guys look forward to this segment, but we have a lot of important things to talk about today. We also have an important guest that's going to be on a little later. His name is Timothy Marshall. He wears many hats, but today he is going to talk about himself a little bit, obviously, and some of these hats that he wears. But he's going to talk about some important work that he's doing in the community regarding breast cancer awareness and ovarian cancer awareness. So you definitely want to tune in, keep it locked for that. But before we get into that conversation, I want to talk about my recent trip to Del Rio, Texas. I know many of you had seen the very disturbing images that surfaced throughout the internet and social media depicting Border Patrol agents on horses cracking whips at Haitian migrants. And again, these images were very disturbing and it sparked a lot of outrage, which then brought forth awareness of a situation that had been occurring for quite some time. In Del Rio, Texas. So a group of us from New York went down on a fact-finding mission. Councilmember Farrah Lewis, Councilmember-elect Rita Joseph, attorney and advocate Keith White, Alfonso Bernard, Samuel Dargan, executive director of Haitian American Caucus Haiti, as well as George Saint-Eus, co-founder of Frida's House, Inc. We all went down there so that we could see for ourselves what was going on, what was happening, and more importantly, what information we can take back to our respective cities to assist further in this humanitarian crisis. And I can tell you, as a Haitian American who has been doing relief work for over 10 years now in Haiti and in the United States, what I observed was horrific. We were literally feet away from the Haitian migrants, and they were held behind this barricade of some sort. And it was just horrific to witness how they had these individuals piled up on top of each other. Essentially, the kids were on the floor. Again, this is outside under a bridge. The dirt, the dust, the 100-degree weather by day, 50-degree weather by night. They were not properly clothed. I did not see a mask in sight. We were told that no COVID testing was being done there because they had nowhere to quarantine them, which is ridiculous because we just saw miles and miles of vacant land on the way to the international bridge. It was frustrating because the Border Patrol agents had clearly been briefed on how to speak to us. And so everything was rehearsed. Everything was made to sound so positive. But meanwhile, we're looking at the faces of our brothers and sisters and we're like, this doesn't match what you're saying. We were able to speak to some of the migrants almost, I would say, in secret, because every time the migrants tried to speak with us or we tried to even approach to say something to them, we were discouraged and we were intercepted. But we were able to get some stories as to how the conditions were. Some were saying that their children have been sick with diarrhea for days. They received no medical attention. Another woman had stated that her husband and child were removed to a local hospital and that for days she had received no updates. And so the conditions were deplorable. And What was more disgusting, though, was the United States government's attempt to make this seem like this is the most ideal situation. Nothing about what I saw, nothing about what we experienced on the other side of the fence was normal and was okay. None of it was humane. So that was, I believe, Thursday is when we got to the International Bridge. And at the time, there were 3,000 individuals under that bridge. By the time we got back to the International Bridge the next day, everyone was cleared out. There was not one person left. The area was bulldozed. All of the tents were gone. It was as if nothing ever happened. It's as if nothing took place there, which was very, very suspect and very, very alarming, because now the largest question was, where did the Haitians go? So we were able to work with some local organizations in Del Rio that were servicing the Haitian migrants by providing them some clothing, some food, and assisting them in getting into their next destination. These were at least the individuals who were processed and released to these centers. The vast majority, however, was deported back to Haiti. So as we, you know, spoke to the Haitian migrant at these facilities, and as we were able, even on our way back to New York, able to speak with them at the airport, because we saw a lot of them at the airport waiting to get on flight. I spoke to them, asked them where they were from in Haiti, asked them where they were going. A lot of them were going to Florida. And not Miami per se, but Fort Lauderdale, Lake Worth, Naples, Bradenton, Tampa, areas that many of us living in New York might not know of. You know, there were many that are being sent to New York. We actually were on the plane with some coming to Brooklyn. There were a lot of individuals going to New Jersey. And so what I was able to do was give them my phone number, and let them know that they can call me if they have any questions, if they need an immigration attorney. I can put them in contact with someone, even though I am not living in some of these states that they're going to, but that I, you know, if they communicate with me, I can help them get in contact with somebody that can assist them. You know, just giving them words of encouragement and just hope, letting them know that the areas that they were going to are good areas. Some of them, you know, have no idea where Indiana is in relation to Florida. Letting them know that when they get to their cities, reach out to the Haitian churches. So it was, you know, it was a hard situation. And I think that it's, you know, what's going on right now, it begs the question, you know, what kind of country are we living in, right? But I think we need to get past, it's hard to get past that question. It's hard to get past questioning what is the U.S. government doing. But these individuals, our brothers and sisters, they are here. They are in a city near you. And we need to figure out how we can mobilize to assist them, to help them integrate successfully into these communities, right? And so what I've been doing with a variety of professionals in the New York, New Jersey area, we've been mobilizing, we've been creating coalitions, we've been creating teams to address some of the various needs that will need to be met. Little Haiti BK DREP committee, which is the Disaster Relief Emergency Preparedness Committee, has been at the forefront, already integrating our Haitian brothers and sisters that came from Chile, that came from Brazil, that came from Panama and Mexico, already integrating them into our communities. So the work is not done. And unfortunately, what we experienced is not, this is not going to be the last. It hasn't been, it wasn't the first, but it's not going to be the last. There were 16,000 migrants under that bridge, and now there are zero. We hear that there are about maybe another 10,000 to 15,000 migrants on their way to the Texas border. So this is a humanitarian crisis that is going to be ongoing, unfortunately. But I think that as a community, as the diaspora, we are in a great position to assist. We are in a great position to lend our talents to the cause. We are looking for social workers, mental health providers, you know, medical professionals. We're looking for education professionals. We are looking for professionals and over, you know, across the board, because everybody has a role in this transitioning of our brothers and sisters. So I just wanted to talk about that experience briefly. I had an Instagram live that is still saved on the Black Ivy Media page, where myself, Councilmember Farrah Lewis, Councilmember Rita Joseph, Attorney Keith White, Alfonso Bernard, and Sam Dargan had talked about the experiences and what some of the next steps are going to be and what we need to be mindful of as a community. So you can check out that live stream on the Black Ivy Media page on Instagram. But I wanted to take this time just to highlight the issue, to talk about the fact-finding mission. A lot of good came out of it because we were able to work alongside organizations and identify credible sources where people can donate money, can donate, items. So if you are interested in donating to any of these causes, we will be posting the information on the Black Ivy Media platform. So just follow us there to get any up-to-date information. But in general, if there's anybody out here that's listening that is interested in helping, you can send me an email at accordingtorp@gmail.com. You can DM me at the According to RP Instagram site. You can DM me at Black Ivy Media, and we will put you to work. We will activate you so that we can get the job done. So with that being said, we are on now to the meat of the show. All right, everyone, I'm here with my very special guest, Timothy Marshall. Timothy, please say hello.
Good morning, everyone. Hello.
So, Timothy, thank you so much for gracing us with your presence and being on this show. I know you are a man of many talents, and I want to get into that today. But if you could just start off by telling us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and then what you do.
Okay, first and foremost, it's a privilege and an honor to be here. Thank you for having me. Timothy Marshall, born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, East Flatbush / Canarsie section. Parents from Barbados and Trinidad, but I was raised in Brooklyn.
Okay, cool.
I wear many hats, an educator, security, promoter, fashion designer, among many others, but that's the ones we'll.
Okay, that's what we'll talk about for today.
Yeah, for sure.
So I know, Timothy, you do a lot, right? But you also promote a lot of important causes.
Right.
And I know that two of the causes that you've been promoting for a while now is ovarian cancer and breast cancer, correct?
That's correct.
Awareness around those two cancers. So could you talk to us a little bit about how you got involved in promoting, especially breast cancer, right? People will think breast cancer, like, why is he promoting breast cancer? Why is there, like, how are men involved in this movement? Are men involved in this movement? So talk to us about that, especially, because I know people are probably wondering how you got in there.
That's an awesome question. And around 8 years ago, I lost two very important people to me, one from ovarian cancer, one from breast cancer. Around that time, I was also promoting. I was a top promoter at Milk River, mm-hmm. Brooklyn. And my friend Marlon, who worked at Milk River, said, you should do a girls' night out. And a friend of mine named Laverne said, you should attach it to a cause.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with the passing of those friends, I said, you know what? I'll have a girls' night out, and I'll make it pink and teal, because those are the colors of ovarian and breast cancer. And for you, you're right. Like, those are women cancers.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, men have women that they love, right?
Right.
So either your grandmother, your moms, your aunt, your wife, your girlfriend, your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So why not be a part of this? And the awareness was very important to me because my friend who passed, she found out that she had ovarian cancer in the final stages.
Mm.
And it's called the silent killer.
Because
mm-hmm. usually when you find out, it's in stage four and there's not much time left to live. So just to spread awareness to women, that's something I wanted to do while entertained. Because it's not like the shows are not like funerals or anything like
that.
It's more of a celebration of life.
Right, right.
Yeah, so that's how I got involved.
Okay, that's a beautiful story because I feel like, again, it's very rare that you find men at the forefront of these causes. And we talk a lot about breast cancer, but we actually don't talk a lot about ovarian cancer. And like you said, it is a silent killer. Unfortunately, I've had people pass away with that too. And that's always the same story. They find out and then like not too long afterwards, you know, they're gone. So I think that raising awareness for, you know, ovarian cancer is really important for our community as well too.
And not to generalize, but, you know, in our community, a lot of times we have this fundamental distrust and fear of doctors.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends who, with the best benefits, or doctors don't know everything. And, you know, there's this distrust.
Yeah.
And we don't listen to our bodies. How many times you hear somebody say, oh, their knee is hurting. Oh, it's probably. I'm like, you're not a doctor, man. You need to, one of the phrases of the Teal organization, that's to tell every amazing lady, they deal with the ovarian cancer. That's mm-hmm. what I'm raising the money for. But they say, listen to your body. It whispers. It's always whispering to you. Like we have ailments. Oh, that's probably gas. Or that's mm-hmm. probably this.
Yep.
And that self-diagnosis, those are times when you could probably be finding out what exactly you have with medical help, not right. just self-diagnosis.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
what are some things that the organization has done to raise awareness? Because I know you have something coming up soon, so I want you to talk about that. But, you know, just so people can have an understanding of, you know, what your organization does and how it raises the awareness.
Well, my organization or the Teal?
The Teal organization.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Teal organization. See, when I was looking for an organization to donate money to, you know, I'm a very skeptical person.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say pessimistic, but I'm very realistic. And in the past, when you hear about all these people who raised money for Haiti and, you know, and for different disasters that have happened and the money doesn't get to the people, that enrages me.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked, I searched, I scoured for an organization and through the help of some friends of mine, we found this organization, Teal.
Mm-hmm.
And, what they do is they provide awareness. They mm-hmm. have a Teal Walk every year. They have support groups. They have grief counseling. Mm. They have estate planning. Like, they're really in the trenches.
Yeah.
So I don't mind raising an organization when you see that they've personally helped people that you know.
Right.
So that's been my thing. Who minds raising money if you see where the money is going?
That's true.
So for the past 6 years, 7 years actually, I've had these shows. And in the past 5 years, because they canceled the walks, the past 2 years, I've mm-hmm. been out there on the Teal Walk with a group called Sisters with a Goal.
And okay.
We register people, sign them up. And we're in the trenches. It's not just a fly-in
mm-hmm.
once a year deal. And I've also tied ribbons around trees on Flatbush Avenue, like the teal ribbons.
Okay.
In remembrance of those lost and for cancer awareness.
Okay. And so with this, you know, year, right, what are some of the things you're planning on doing to raise awareness this year for the organization?
Well, the two things. Again, this is my sixth annual Pink and Teal Girls Night Out. And we have an awareness table set up. But what Girls Night Out really is I have some R&B and reggae artists. They're not household names,
mm-hmm.
but they're amazing singers. And what they do is serenade the ladies all night.
Aww.
And I honor two ovarian cancer survivors, two breast cancer survivors. And this year, it was laid on my heart to honor COVID champions, like mm-hmm. people during the COVID season, people who are giving back, people who are in the trenches, people who are donating to the first responders, donating to the essential workers. Mm-hmm. You know, I just felt compelled to do that because even though it's a breast cancer and awareness thing, it's my platform, so I could honor whoever I want.
Right? Okay.
And then a couple of days later, I'm having a pink and teal bike ride, a 30-mile bike ride from Brooklyn to Far Rockaway, Queens, back to Brooklyn. Because I'm also, I didn't say this earlier, I'm a fitness enthusiast and,
okay.
And a cyclist. So I said, you know, how could I incorporate men in this? Because
mm-hmm.
My audience is 90% women, like, and that's historically so.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a lot of friends who want to help, males. So I came up with this idea. Let me do a bike ride. I ride my bike. 30 miles sounds doable. So what we're going to do is do this ride, and it costs $30 to join.
Mm-hmm.
And with that $30, I give you a T-shirt, and the rest of the proceeds go to Teal again. So okay. Between the concert on the Wednesday and the bike ride on the Saturday, after you pay the bills, all of the proceeds go directly to the Teal organization.
Okay, great. So we're September 29th.
Yes.
That's the Wednesday for the show. Mm-hmm. And then on October 2nd, which is a Saturday?
That's correct.
Okay, great.
Saturday morning, 8 a.m.
All right. So how can people then sign up either to be a participant in the show or to attend the bike ride?
Okay, that's quite simple. If you follow me at Best Show in Brooklyn, the link for the concert is in my bio, but you could also DM me. You could call me 347-231-9528, and you could also email me, marshall3171@gmail.com. And if you reach out to me, I will respond in a timely fashion.
All right, great. All right, great. So now I want to go backwards a little bit and talk about some of these other things that you do, right? Because you mentioned that you've been an educator for quite some time now, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've talked about education a lot on this platform, the state of education, especially now with, you know, COVID and this pandemic and how are our kids going to thrive through all of this. And so talk a little bit about your experience being an educator in Brooklyn, right? And then maybe what are some of your observations in terms of how things are moving forward while we're in this pandemic? Because, you know, a lot of people are skeptical as to how our kids are going to thrive with everything that's happening now. And you're an educator, and I want to kind of get your take on that.
It's funny that you say that because in June, I just finished my 30th year, and I'm no longer educating.
You'll always be an educator at heart.
No, facts. But between me on a quest to unwrap all my gifts and just COVID season in general, the loss of life, just the emotional and behavioral patterns of kids who are subjected to not seeing their friends and remote learning on the fly. And now they're thrusting them back into school and schools are closing down.
Mm-hmm.
To be frank, I don't believe in this system, what's going on right now. Mm. And I didn't want to be a part of it. Like I will admit, I worked in a family-owned school, private school. So I can't imagine the horrors what the public schools are going through.
Yeah.
'Cause we had it under control. We didn't have many cases. You know, we had alternate school days for different ages and stuff like that. So our experience is not as tenuous as this fiasco that's going on in the Department of Education, where they seemingly change the rules every day. They don't know what they're doing. They really don't know what they're doing. So I'm not qualified to speak on that their behalf, but from the outside looking in, it's a total fiasco.
So then what do we do about the children?
I think there still should be remote learning, but you know, people think because they're tired or something, because they had enough of being on lockdown, just because you're tired and had enough, that doesn't mean that the situation is over. And I know you're angry that a lot of parents are angry that they have to in turn teach their kids when they're home. And there's no free time for them. And the kids aren't learning as much as they should because they're home and they're actually teaching themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you got what you want. Now school's open, and now they're closing schools because of COVID.
Yeah.
So it's really a catch-22. You got to be careful what you ask for. I wish school was open. Okay, it's open. And now it's closed again because kids mm-hmm. have COVID.
So I guess what's one thing that you could advise either the community, parents, in terms of how they can then sustain these children, right? Because we're not just talking about them being in school, but we're talking about their educational experience, their overall educational experience moving forward, right? Because they, you know, we're only moving forward in life, you know, even though all these things are happening, they're still going to have to move forward. So what's one thing that you could say as somebody who's been in the education business for a long time that, you know, that we can say that can help sustain these kids? It might not necessarily be the school, right? But maybe it's the community. Maybe it's something that parents could do at home that can at least give these kids some hope for the future.
Well, the first thing is really not an elaborate plan, but especially as people of color, we need to take our children's mental health more seriously and our mental health, especially children and especially men. Because our men are taught to suppress their feelings or don't cry, man up.
Right.
And then children now, oh, you don't have problems. The adults say that to kids. Like, you don't have no big problems. These kids are longing for their friends and social relations with their people. These kids are on the fly. You know, they had to be home and cooped up in the house and the fear of going to the park. And so what I could say the community could do is actually listen to children, because the best answers come from children.
That's true.
Because there's no ulterior motives. They're just going to tell you how they feel. But a lot of times with the adults, so many people want to be in charge that nothing gets done.
That is a problem. That's a very big problem. But I think that you hit the nail right on the head. Listening to the children, I've had a couple of people on the show and they've kind of mentioned that same thing, that there's, you know, there's just this lack of, I don't want to say interest, but when it comes to the children, it's kind of like they're just kids. That's, they don't have an opinion.
And to be real, that's I'm glad my parents weren't like that, but that's a strong Caribbean thing. Like children should be seen and not heard.
Right,
like,
right.
And I'm like, so if there's a fire, right, and the child sees it and he's trying to warn you and alert you that there's a fire, he's not going to listen?
Right.
Kids tell the truth, man. A lot of times children are screaming out for help and people don't realize till after it's too late.
So I want to move to another part of your life, right? You do shows.
Yes.
And you've been doing shows for quite some time. In fact, you have, your Instagram name is The Best Show in Brooklyn.
Why would I lie? Is it true?
So I want you to talk about these shows. I know what you do for awareness, right? There's the shows for awareness, but I want to know a little bit about these other shows that you put on.
Absolutely. Very instrumental in highlighting and promoting Jess Hilarious, Major Hype, Kev on Stage, Jesse Wu.
Oh, I love Kev on Stage.
my deceased dear friend Damon Rozier. There's so many comedians that I've helped along the way. So I've been doing this for quite some time, growing in sexy entertainment, helping people to laugh and escape their problems. So I've done 9 shows with Major Hype. I've done 6 shows with Jess Hilarious. Just people need comedy, and I mix it with music as well.
Okay.
And ambiance, and definitely grown and sexy.
Okay.
Definitely. But this is fun. I enjoy it. And it's just like entertaining your friends, giving them something to do and something awesome to do. Get them to dress up. I have a Christmas gala. See, COVID season slowed everything down. Like I stopped. No, this is the first event after COVID.
Wow.
Because I see a lot of people doing virtual things and having all these people out of mask in sight. And I'm not judging. It's like, I don't want to subject my people to that. So if they want to do it on their own, they could go, but I won't be responsible
right.
for any super spreader events.
Like listen, you will be judged.
Yeah, I felt away. I was like, I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, what if I had a show and like people caught that?
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I care about people. Mm-hmm. It's not about just the bread with me. I care about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And it would not sit well on my soul knowing that I hospitalized 50 yeah. of my friends.
You curated the super spreader event.
I lost so many people during COVID.
Yeah.
Like really and truly. So I slowed down a bit, but I'm waiting to see how mm-hmm. things happen in the world. And then I promise, like, on the other side of this, I'll mm-hmm. come back with some great force. And cause I have a lot of ideas, but I
right.
you know, be patient, you know?
Okay, I mean, can you drop a little exclusive on the show? Can we get a little exclusive?
Well, like I said, I've done 9 shows mm-hmm. with Major Hype. And so what's the next number?
10.
And I just turned 50 years old, so.
Oh, well, happy birthday, whenever that was.
So, and I didn't celebrate my birthday in the grand style that I normally do.
Mm-hmm.
So who's to say I won't. You're doing something in grand style, like a reunion of sorts with
right.
some of my past, maybe. Who knows?
Okay. Maybe. Wink, wink.
Maybe. Maybe, okay. Definitely, maybe. You know?
Sounds good. So I do want to touch on something you mentioned, like the virtual event. So is that something that you weren't necessarily into? Because I know a lot of people who are in the entertainment biz in a sense, right? And events, in-person events, where like their major, like bread and butter, that was their main thing. And then now the transition, a lot of them have said, you know what, we're not even going to mess with this virtual thing because it's not the same experience. Is that kind of where you were with that?
I understood it. Mm-hmm. I applauded the Verses. I applauded D-Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Some great things came out of it.
Yeah.
The family reunions on Zoom and mm-hmm. such. Like, nah, I'm not a hater about it.
Yeah.
It's just for me, my thing is in-person events. So I would never like throw shade on anybody mm-hmm. who does that. I'm just saying for me, that's not something I wanted to do.
Okay.
But if you could do it and pull it off, that D-Nice set that night.
Right.
Yo, that was incredible. And a lot of those verses that Swiss and Timbaland put together, mm-hmm. it was incredible. To the point now, it's like when they're doing it live, it's dope. Like, it was a great idea.
Yeah.
And it came out of desperation and, you know, isolation
mm-hmm.
and a way to raise people's spirits. So, no shade, no hate, just extreme. I'm proud of them, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Especially D-Nice, because I know him personally. So, to see him do that and how it's changed his life.
Yeah.
You know, that's amazing to me. It's just that everything is not for everybody.
Yeah. And I definitely take that, because when you're talking about, when I think about comedy shows, although I watch, you know, comedy sets online all the time, it's a different experience when you're in person and being there with other people, laughing, getting picked on by the...
It's like when you hear a joke secondhand, it doesn't have the same luster.
Right.
But I understood that it grew out of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
Like people were dressing up and you had to take your mind away from your circumstance, just even if it's for an hour or two.
Right.
So I understood that for the mental health aspect.
Mm-hmm.
We were locked down.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you know, like when you watch those cartoons and you see like two people stranded on an island and then their friend starts to look like a hamburger or something. Like that. Because that's what it was.
Yeah.
People were home, like desperate. So I get it. The mind, boy.
Mm-hmm.
The mind. So, I mean, for them to feel like they were out and they were in their own home, you know, that's why, I mean, those what he did for the culture, the mm-hmm. Nice and Swiss Beats and Timbaland, that was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely, I mean, I still keep up with the Verses, right? And so, like, I feel like it's like my childhood being played in front of me. I just saw the Fat Joe and the Ja Rule.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like some of the matches, I'm like, I don't know, maybe I would have chosen somebody else. But I know there's a lot of, you know, stuff behind the scenes, right? Not every artist is saying, hey, you know, I want to do it. But I think it was the Dipset and the Jadakiss and the locks. And I'm like,
you didn't think that matched?
I don't know if that would have been my choice. Like, I mean, I love Dipset.
Yeah.
I love the locks. But I'm just trying to think. I feel like the locks, I would have wanted another, like, gritty group to match up with the locks. I love Dipset, but they're not like that gritty.
You want to hear something funny, though?
Go ahead.
If the Versus format of that show was in the format that it was before with no audience,
mm-hmm.
Dipset stood a chance.
You think so?
But the locks, no, they have a lot of hits.
Yeah, they do.
But the locks, they come from the Puffy school of performance.
Yeah.
Like, you and Jada is a lyrical animal.
Yeah.
So you put them in front of a live audience. There's not many groups that could outperform mm-hmm. the locks. You'd probably have to say Run DMC back in the day.
That's what I'm saying. Like, some of these, yeah.
But like modern day groups, it's the locks, it's Wu-Tang. It's not many groups that could perform mm-hmm. on that level. The locks have been performing with Puffy for years.
Yeah.
And DMX for years. So that was the recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
Dipset didn't even look like they trained for that.
They didn't train. They didn't rehearse. They didn't make the training.
And the locks don't play when it comes to stuff mm-hmm. like that. So I do believe, like, Dipset has a lot of hits.
They do have a lot of hits.
But they're not ready for the locks, like, in live. And I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Once I saw the live audience, this is not going to go the way people think it's going
to
go.
Yeah. I was trying to think. I'm like, who could be with Dipset? I mean, a lot of my friends, we had jokes. They're like, I don't know, maybe the St. Lunatics.
But, you know, they didn't have enough hits. Like, the only groups that had hits, I guess, and then Mobb Deep and the locks could go, but then Prodigy's passed.
Yeah.
Wu-Tang is so many people in that group.
It's like, I know.
You have like a million people on stage.
It's all a Staten Island out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, so it's like, there's no, that was a good versus. And I think it,
I mean, it record. Was good. It did. It was good. But I think in the beginning, when I first saw the matchup, I'm like, the locks, really? With Dipset? I'm like, they couldn't find another. But it was very entertaining, though. I will tell you that much. Very entertaining.
There's a couple of artists who you, like, people sleep on, and then you start adding up and tallying their hits. You're like, yo, Fabolous is one of those people.
Yeah, Fabolous had a lot of hits.
That's that group where, oh, they didn't have no hits. And then when you watch the verses,
you didn't know it was them.
Like, you know, because I've always been a Locks fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy for them mm-hmm. that it gave them a resurgence. Like,
yeah.
Like, their Google numbers were up.
Right. Everybody was downloading on Spotify.
I was like, that's what's up, man.
Yep.
Because that's the thing about staying true to yourself, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything comes back around. If you're you, just stay the course, mm-hmm. hold the ground, and eventually the people who need to hear you, the respect you need to get, will eventually come.
That's true.
It's when you play yourself and trying to be everything else. Then when you fail not being you.
Right.
I could fail being me. Like, at least I know I went down being me. Mm-hmm. Like, that's important to me. Personal integrity.
Yeah. And I think it's important in that entertainment industry because we see so much
fakeness.
Yeah.
Imagery.
Right.
Gimmickry. And that must be a horrible feeling to pretend to be something that you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to be authentic.
Maybe you have to teach a master class on that.
Authenticity
101.
You got to be real because there's been times, a couple of times in my life where you front a little bit. And I don't mean, like, even in relationships, like a lot of things, you front
because
it's the thing you think it's the thing to do, but that kills you inside.
Yeah,
when you're not you, that definitely kills you inside.
Yep, and I think that's why we see so much drug use, mental illness, alcohol abuse, anxiety, especially within that industry too. Right,
post-traumatic stress disorder. There's so many things that come out of the need to not be you.
Mm-hmm.
Because people just want to step away from reality because their reality is horrible.
Heavy topics. Heavy topics, but important things to talk about, right? Because I feel like with all of these young kids that are coming up in this, you know, it doesn't have to be just a rap game, the singing game, the comedic game. You know, I think that a lot of them are already struggling. And then now you're into this industry where it's kind of like you have to fake it, or it's telling you you have to fake it.
It's so true that you bring that up, and thank you for bringing that up, because you know, we get tricked into, like, we see an Instagram post that lasts 60 seconds or a picture that's highly filtered.
Mm-hmm.
And we think, yo, that person is happy. And then you see so many people, Robin Williams, Whitney Houston, DMX, like so many people that they would, people would give their life to be that person.
Right.
And that person doesn't want to be that person.
Right.
So, like, we have to be careful of what people portray.
Mm-hmm.
Because look at that word, image. It's an image. Mm-hmm. It's not real.
Yeah.
So I always take my hat off to people who have remained their authentic self from
mm-hmm.
the end. And then people like Mike Tyson, people like DMX, people like Cardi B, who there's no front.
Right, exactly. You can't be mad at Cardi. Some people have something to say. I love Cardi because she's not playing games.
I'm not going to say like I like all her music or whatever, mm-hmm. but I like who she is.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a stripper. Like I'm a former stripper. I could suck a watermelon through mm-hmm. a stripper. I'm like, yo, I mean, you may not appreciate the content, but you have to respect
the person.
They know who they are. Because mm-hmm. you got so many people, from politicians to religious figures to entertainers, who are all living a lie. And that's the worst place to be. And mm-hmm. then you have people like Tyson, who had it all, lost it all, went to prison, you know, but he's always been him.
Yeah.
And you could never say he fronted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's you might not like the road they take, but they're authentically them.
Right. And I think that's definitely the message. And I feel like more and more people who are within that space should, you know, I mean, I understand Instagram is what it is, right? But I think that if more people give like the behind the scenes and the real talk, I think that that will kind of help maybe guide some of these younger kids who rely solely on social media.
Because so. that's true, too, because most people aren't posting their losses.
They're not.
They're not posting their credit card balance.
Mm-mm.
They're not posted how many times they tried and failed.
Right.
They're not posted the ugly side of their life. They're just posting the victories and the wins.
Mm-hmm.
And you help more people posting your losses than you would with your victory.
Right.
Like there's an old saying. It says that rock bottom teaches you lessons that mountaintops could not.
Mm.
Like, you learn more from your struggles. And I hate when a lot of rappers glorify, you know, the drug life and the crime life, but don't tell them, like, the jail time,
mm-hmm.
the families that are left in shambles.
Right.
After the
consequences.
After the breadwinner is in the hole. You know, they always talk about, yeah, I got money, I got whips, I got chains, I got this. But what about the lawyer fees? What about?
Right.
What about those things?
The bankruptcy.
The L's. Talk about the L's, man. Because the W's sound nice, but there's a lot of L's that
people
take. And if you keep it real, that's the thing. We're afraid to be real about the losses, man.
Yeah, because it doesn't make us feel good, right? And people want to feel good.
You get more props when you keep it real, man.
That's going to be a quote. We're going to quote that. We're going to post that.
Keep it real. Cause
right.
Again, who wins every day?
Well, Instagram makes you think that people win every day. That's the thing. And they wake up like this, right?
It makes unwise people think that.
Right.
Because as I just alluded to, think of these people. If I would have told you years ago that Michael Jackson, Prince, Whitney Houston, Robin Williams, Tupac, Biggie, like that the circumstances around their death would happen. Like, Whitney, God, come on, stop.
Right. Not Whitney.
Because we would have thought that, yo, they living the life, man.
Mm-hmm.
So even millionaires, they got issues, man. So why wouldn't 100-aire?
Right.
Or 1,000-aire.
1,000-aire.
Have issues.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we got to stop thinking in terms that, like, we put people on a pedestal,
mm-hmm.
and they don't even want to be on the pedestal.
You don't want to be seen.
So the circumstances that unfolded, like with certain stars, is eye-opening to me. That don't fake it. Be real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's all going to come out at your funeral.
Right? Somebody's going to spill it.
Yeah, it's all going to come out. Like when they die, then you start hearing, oh, yeah, she was a heavy drug user for years. Or he was taking antidepressants. Or, you know, he had post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
That you'll hear it afterwards. Hmm. Not realizing if you mentioned that early, how many lives you could help.
Right. Heavy stuff. It's always heavy stuff, but important stuff, like I said. So I want to touch on one more aspect of your life, the security business. I know you own a security business, and then I'm going to ask you, how do you manage all these things, right? But I want to talk about the security business because it's an active business. And I'm always hearing of people needing security for either whether it's, you know, parties or whether it's events or whether it's, you know, I don't know, their homes or whatever. So talk to us about your security business and how you got into that. Like, how were you able to own your own security business?
Well, I was 386 pounds. I was a big boy. And this is before, like back in the day, and people say, oh, I'm having a party. Could you do the door for me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it started. I had a friend, he's since passed away. His name was PJ. And he told me, oh, I want you to recruit some security guards for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a recruiter first and foremost. Guys would need work. And I'll say, listen, you get your security license and I could promise you work. So we did a lot of Times Square restaurants, Ruby Foods, Bluefin, like a lot of those eateries, those Caminos. And
I love those Caminos.
Yeah, cool. So after a while, you know, people see you out and about, and then event spaces. I have done security at event spaces. Then people see you there. Listen, I'm having a mansion party. I like the way you did this, that, and the third.
Mm-hmm.
So just out of the need, you know, people always think of security as bouncers and goons.
That's what, yeah, usually.
But a lot of times people are looking for high-end security where there's no problems.
Mm-hmm.
They want to secure their event spaces, their restaurants, their mansion parties, and they don't want it to be a rough look.
Yeah.
They want a more polished look. So what I offer is guys who, it could be good, or it could be hood. It's what you need. Mm-hmm. Last Friday we did a video shoot, and I couldn't take my polished guys to that. I had to get my grimy guys.
Mm-hmm.
Or a couple of weeks prior to that, we did a wedding. And they need security for the event space.
Mm-hmm.
So it was two guys, well-dressed, and they go for that. So that's how it goes, by the need.
Okay.
But I try to stay away from the street level stuff as I've gotten older.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's something that could benefit and a lot of people could eat, we do it that way. But you ask how I manage all these things. The only thing that was difficult to manage was to do all those things while being an educator.
Okay.
Like my sister and I were running a school. And that, I was there from 7 to 5 every day.
Mm-hmm.
So everything else had to get in and fit in around that. So that was the difficult part. But the good thing about events, the events didn't suffer because you know when that's coming.
Yeah.
I'm planning it.
Mm-hmm.
So my Christmas event was at this time, or my cancer event is at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So I strategically plan those where it will be easier for me to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
I did mention fashion to you. I designed tuxedos and
coats.
Yes,
you mentioned that too. I'm like, we're trying to get it all out here.
which that's easy too, because people will come to me, I'm getting married in May. Can you do the tuxedo? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We have time now. So it's not a tomorrow thing.
Right.
So I have become a master in time management. You have to be.
Mm-hmm.
I take my time very seriously. I'm punctual, as you can see.
Yes.
I don't play, because you don't get time back.
Right.
So that's how I was able to juggle things. But that's a good question, though. But as far as security, you know, it feels good to put a lot of people to work.
Right.
So that's where that stems from.
Okay. So what's the name of your security company? If somebody is, you know, again, listening and they're like, wow, I need some posh or maybe I need some goons, you know?
Yeah. Good or hood.
Good or hood.
Brooklyn certified.
All right.
Just reach out to me. And
okay, cool.
Get you situated.
All right. And so the information that you provided earlier would be the same information.
Yeah, I
so,
have one Instagram page
okay.
that facilitates all of this. I can't have like 5-6 different pages.
Okay. So just one more time, because some people might be tuning in a little later into the segment. Just give us the information of how we can contact you.
My Instagram, Best Show in Brooklyn. Just Best Show in Brooklyn. You can reach me at 347-231-9528. And my email address is Marshall, MARSHALL, 3171@gmail.com.
All right. Well, before we end, I do want to just remind everybody that we have the two events coming up, right? September 29th, the Girls Night Out.
That's Girls Night Out, Pink and Teal. That'll be at the Simpson Restaurant. It's right by the Barclays. Doors open at 5. Showtime is at 7. We have performers like Reginald Spencer, Venor, Bud Ramsey, Lydia Caesar. We have Ricchetti. We have Ashton Martin. We have Samantha Howard. We have Mark Prentice. Those are the performers.
Okay.
Celebrity chef, Mr. Simpson. He owns the restaurant.
Oh, nice.
And this is his first live performance event at his venue.
Okay.
So that's going to be spectacular. He's a tremendous chef.
Okay.
So, if you want tickets for that, that's also the link in my bio. They're almost sold out.
Okay.
And we'll also be honoring ovarian and breast cancer survivors, as well as our COVID champions, people who have did an instrumental job during COVID-19 crisis.
All right. And then there is the October 2nd bike ride for those who are maybe somewhat physically fit. Do you have to be physically fit to do 30 miles?
I've fixed a route where if somebody wanted to stop at a certain point, that's fine.
Okay.
The real thing is to get everybody out there active and raise this money for the organization. So it's really not about you finish 30 miles. I won't frown on anybody who, if you did 5 miles.
what about two?
I mean, as long as you show up. Because right. the key is, see, we have to think, this is not a fitness challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no shade or shame. This is, we're raising money.
Right.
So you already paid your money. So if all you can do is 2 miles or 1 mile, then that's what it is.
All right. You hear that, everyone? No.
Yeah, seriously. That's what it is. As long as you can support and participate. That's all. And being, you'll be in the photo op, whether you finish 2 miles or 30 miles.
Right.
We're not going to diss you like that. You're good money.
All right, cool. And so for that, where is the meetup for that going to
in
be?
In front of Kings Plaza.
Okay.
The Avenue U side.
Okay.
And that'll be at 8 o'clock.
All right, great. And all this information could be found on your page anyway. Yeah. So and if you guys are getting lost, go to the Best Show in Brooklyn.
That's the best way. And call me and I'll talk to you. I don't shun. Just don't be scam likely.
Yeah, don't be scam likely. Don't send inappropriate messages, guys. I always warn, you know, whenever I have guests on that give their information, I'm like, guys, let's be respectful.
Yeah, I don't mind. I could always block you. Like,
that is true. Yeah. But we don't wanna create that energy here. So if you're inappropriate, stay away.
Facts. I just wanna commend you though on an awesome format.
Oh, thank you.
A great platform. And I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
You helped the good work as well.
Thank you. All right. Well, Timothy, thank you again for being here and sharing so much knowledge, because you're a knowledgeable one, but you do so many things, right? And you're succeeding at all these things. So that's amazing that you can share a little bit about what you do. And I'm pretty sure that somebody picked up at least one or two gems from this conversation today.
Well, great questions, because that's what brought out the answers. So.
Thank you.
So keep up the good work and keep mastering your craft. You're awesome at it.
Thank you. Well, all right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I will talk to you guys next week. And that's it.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday. Can't wait to come back.